Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, everybody, to the Raiders Insider Podcast presented by the Evergood Sausage Company. We make the sausages you crave. And I'm your host, NBC Sports Bay Area Raiders Insider Scott Baer. And with me this week is a guest I am so fired up about. I got Mr. Raider, Tim Brown, Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receiver on the podcast. And the timing could not be better. The NFL draft is coming up next week, and it marks the 30th anniversary of when Al Davis selected Tim Brown, wide receiver, University of Notre Dame, and Heisman Trophy winner, number 6 overall in the 1988 draft. And we talked to Tim about that experience of being drafted, about assimilating into the NFL and his influences early on during his days as an LA Raider and as he transitioned to the Oakland Raiders, and of course worked under John Gruden, who is back again as Raiders head coach. Nobody has better insight on what it's like to work with John, what it's going to take for John Gruden to be successful in today's modern NFL. We talked to Tim Brown about all that and oh so much more. So enough of this intro. Let's focus in on a conversation with Tim Brown. With me on this week's Raiders Insider Podcast is a 9-time Pro Bowler, a 2-time All-Pro, a Heisman Trophy winner, and Mr. Raider himself, Hall of Fame wide receiver, Tim Brown. Tim Brown, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing good, Scott. How are you, brother?
Pretty good. And we're heading towards the NFL draft, less than a week towards it. Now that you're, you know, away from the game a little bit, do you find yourself paying attention to this draft, whether it's what the Raiders do, maybe what Notre Dame does, anything like that? Or do you kind of stay away from all that stuff?
You have a couple, you know, tentacles that keep you close to what's happening. And, you know, for me, it'll be some Notre Dame players, you know, see where Equanimeous Brown is going to go. You know, this year I'll be interested to see where happens with him. Obviously, these quarterbacks, you know, see where these guys go. Then it goes to the Raiders, you know, seeing what the Raiders are going to do. So I'll keep my eye on it, no doubt about it. And, you know, just trying to see what's going to happen with some of these players that you watched in college for so many years.
No, I don't want to date you necessarily, but it's been 30 years since you were taken number 6 overall by the Raiders, starting what turned into a gold jacket career. Take me back to 1988. What do you remember about that day? Where were you? Set the scene for us.
Yeah, well, you know, that was way before everybody started going to New York. I think that year was the first year they brought a player into New York. They brought Andre Bruce, who was the first overall pick in the draft that year. They brought him there to announce on TV. But no one else was there. I don't believe, anyway. Well, it seems like I remember Sterling Thurman Thomas, a camera followed him around somewhere because everybody thought he was going to be a first-round pick and end up not being a first-round pick. But I was sitting in my apartment, man, in South Bend, Indiana, waiting for a call, and my agent didn't really know what was going to happen. He thought that Cincinnati would take me or maybe even Tampa at the fourth or fifth position, so... and those were two places I really didn't want to go. It's pretty ironic to end up finishing my career in Tampa. But at that particular time, those teams were looking for a savior, you know, and look, I mean, the fact of the matter is I thought that I could return punts and kicks in the NFL. I thought I was gifted to do that. But when it came to playing receiver, I just said no because, you know, Lou Holtz got there. We were the three-point stands as receivers. And then my senior year, I went to I was in the wishbone most of the time. 90% of the time, we played a wishbone offense. So, so for me, I was hoping that looking at the Raiders rosters and James Lofton and Mervin Fernandez and Marcus Allen and Bo Jackson, you know, this was not a team that needed a savior. And I felt like that was a team, if I got to, I had time to learn. I didn't have to play day one, you know. And so from that standpoint, when the Raiders called right before the third or fourth pick saying that they were going to take me, I was pretty excited about that.
So did you have like a big draft party or was it just a couple people? You know, because now that the draft is so big, you see, you know, dozens and dozens of people around this one athlete. Like, was it that type of environment for you or was it more?
No. We had no clue about draft parties and all that kind of stuff, man. It was me, my girlfriend at the time, and a couple of the players of the team. I mean, it may have been six people there. May have been. I'm not even so sure about that. But you know, at the same time, right after everybody heard, you know, we got together and had a good time. But definitely no lights, no party, no music, none of that. It was just five or six people sitting in the room.
And what was that experience like? You go to the Raiders. Obviously, there's such a big Al Davis mystique, but you mentioned the skilled players that they had on that team. You're also going to you're going to Hollywood, right? That must have been a pretty cool experience for a kid who spent his last 4 years in Indiana.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, being that we played two games in L.A. at Notre Dame going to USC, you know, we would always go Monday before that game and be out there the whole week. So we really got a good taste of what L.A. was about. And, you know, from a Notre Dame point of view, you know, they're not going to allow you to be out partying to, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's true. Still,
we were able to see the city. So, you know, I wasn't that overwhelmed. I had a lot of family, a lot of first cousins who are my age. In LA, uncles, aunties. So it was really a very soft landing spot for me. So I wasn't overwhelmed by LA and Hollywood and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, it was a very, very interesting time in my life, no doubt about it.
And you made the Pro Bowl the first year. You had more than 700 receiving yards. Did it just seem like a seamless transition? Do you ever have any rookie moments there? I mean, from a performance standpoint, it obviously went really well.
Well, you know, I had great guys around me. You know, James Lofton, they end up later in that draft, they traded for Willie Gault and brought him in also. And Mervin Fernandez was there. Jesse Hester, who was probably the best route runner we had on the team at that time. So the four of those guys really, I mean, you look at what I had. I had a guy in James Lofton, who is probably one of the smartest football players ever been around, could dissect a defense, you know, the second they come out the huddle. I had him teaching me. I had a speed guy like Willie Gault showing me how to run deep on people. I had Jesse Hester, like I said, was the best route runner, you know, teaching me how to, you know, get a guy off his heels and all this kind of stuff. Get a guy on his heels, I should say. Then I had Mervin Fernandez, who was probably the best pass catching receiver that I've ever seen. You know, and I had all these guys teaching me and pouring into me, man. So Willie got hurt a little bit. James got hurt a little bit. Mervin, you know, all these guys got hurt, but I was the only one still playing. So, you know, I ended up starting a few games my rookie year because of injuries or whatever. It went well. It went well, you know, surprisingly well. You know, I think, you know, with those guys helping me out, you know, it wasn't as big a curve as I thought it was going to be. So I was able to put up some good yards receiving.
Is it crazy kind of to think, I mean, these memories that we're talking about, like, does it feel like it happened yesterday or does it feel like, man, that really has been 30 years?
No, it certainly doesn't feel like 30 years, man. You know, it's really hard to believe sometimes that, you know, all this time has passed, but I got the scars and the scratches to prove that
yeah,
it did happen. So, You know, I think from that standpoint, you know, you always, you know, look back on those times fondly, because I know this, that I gave it everything I had, and I gave the league 17 of the best years I could possibly give it. And so I walk away with my head up high, knowing that I've done all I could possibly do.
Yeah, and wearing a gold jacket to prove it. I'm sure with I'm sure that with you know, John Gruden obviously being back as Raiders head coach, you get asked about him a lot. I guess are you curious to see how this first year goes for him? What's been your take on how he's kind of assembling this roster so far?
You know, look, it's gonna be really good or really bad.
Yeah.
And only way it's gonna be really bad is because some of these players, you know, are not adapting to John's way of doing things. And I can't see that happening, really. I can't. You know, I think John is such a likable guy that he knows how to talk to players. He knows how to bring a guy in his office and be able to massage that guy in a way that this guy walks out thinking, okay, this guy's on my side, and not just thinking that, but knowing that the coach is on his side. So you know, I hope that these guys would buy in. You know, they're younger, you know, they're more advanced than we are in some ways when it comes to their thinking about the game and about you know, what they want to get out of the game. You know, for us, it was all about legacy and that. And I don't know if that's the case with a lot of these guys. So, and that may be the main clash, because John loves football so much. If you don't, I mean, you're going to hear him say 100 times, probably in a week and not during the season. Do you love football, man? Do you love football? Do you love football, man? I mean, he used to ask it all the time. Do you love it? Do you love it, Tim? Do you really love it? You know, I mean, and so he's looking for guys like that. And I don't know if those guys have approached the game that way. And I can't say they have or haven't. I'm just saying, I don't know. But the quicker they have that mentality, the better this team is going to be.
What was it like back in 1998? You have this, you know, young, early, you know, kid in his early 30s taking over the team, and you guys struggled the year before under Joe Bugle. But I mean, you had a heck of a year. I mean, 1,400 yards, more than 100 catches. What was your kind of first impression? Like, what was that first year like with him running the ship?
Well, you know, I had that big year because of Jeff George. I mean, Jeff George and I really had an incredible year together, and it was really amazing how well we played together. And if I had that guy for 10, 12 years, ain't no telling what kind of numbers I would have put up.
No kidding, man.
You know, when John got there, it was just totally different. I mean, we had several conversations about what he wanted to do, and I kept telling him, man, look, I've been here 10 years now. You're not going to be able to do that. And he was like, well, if they won't let me do it, I'm going to get fired. I said, well, you will get fired in 2 years. So because, you know, the changes that he wanted to make, he wanted to bring in real football players. And he wanted to bring in guys who were just not great athletes, but known for what they did on the football field. And that just hadn't been the way the organization had done things in the past. So we talked about that. We talked about the fact that until he got there, I really had never scored a red zone touchdown.
Wow.
Because the Raiders, you know, for whatever reason, when they got inside the 20, either I came out the game or you know, certainly no passes were thrown to me. So he could figure that out. Why is that? I said, I don't know. They just, that was a rule. Don't throw Tim the ball inside the red zone. So he thought that was ridiculous and promised me that I was going to score a touchdown to the red zone. I said, Judge, you're going to get fired, man. You don't understand the way things work around here. So. But, you know, he changed that too. You know, I mean, I think I had 40, 45 touchdowns when he got there. And I think in his 4 years, our 4 years together, I think I had, you know, 40, 45 touchdowns. In those 4 years. So, you know, obviously that helps out tremendously with me wearing this gold jacket. But at the same time, I think that, you know, it showed that the Raiders were trying to do things differently. And I think that's why, you know, we played such great football, you know, we had the, you know, the Tuck game, the Super Bowl, and, you know, we had the AFC Championship game, then the Tuck game, and then the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think that was because of, you know, what John was able to do for us.
Yeah. And obviously your career is well documented with, you know, kind of the fact that you weathered some Raiders struggles, and at times it was, you know, difficult from a winning perspective to have that little stretch there. You guys went 8-8, and then, you know, you had 3 years where you guys were, I don't know, probably the best AFC team, maybe the best team around. To add the winning to it, did that really kind of rejuvenate you a little bit to really kind of add that in there, to have that kind of presence and reputation around the league just as a team that you guys are going to come out and win, and you were a serious elite football team?
Yeah, you know, when Jalen got there, really, I was looking to do one of two things: play a couple more years and end my career, or leave and go to Dallas. Yeah. That was a big on my agenda, to come back here and finish my career here in Dallas. Not for any other reason, just to, you know, establish myself back here in Dallas and be able to live my life here. So, you know, this guy came in talking about these grandiose things, and I'm looking at him like, dude, you know, that's, you know, you just came to the wrong spot for all these great ideas that you have. So, so, when things started to change, man, it really changed my whole way of looking at my career. And, you know, because after a couple of years with John, people started to say, hey, well, you know, your numbers are looking great. If you do this or that, you know, you got a chance to, you know, be considered for the Hall of Fame. So, that was overwhelming. That was a big, big deal, you know, to people. People even be saying that. I never thought it would happen, to be honest with you, because I didn't think I would play till I was 38 years old. Yeah. I thought, you know, I was still retired, 33, 34 years old. So, but things were going so well, there was no reason to retire. And so we just kept fighting the fight.
And, you know, and kind of kept working it. And then, you know, the one thing I don't want this conversation is to talk about, you know, how long it took you to get into the Hall of Fame, because really what's important, I think, to Raiders fans is that you are in there, and that was a deserved thing that you got to experience. I do want to ask you kind of on a tangential, you know, kind of thing, is that Terrell Owens, just like you, had big numbers, and it took him a little while to get in there. And he, you know, you were always really, you know, that you dealt with the long period well. Terrell may not have. He was sort of vocal about being upset about not getting in. What do you think about him finally getting in, and maybe his approach to the whole Hall of Fame process?
You know, I hadn't heard anything here lately, so I hope that, you know, things have settled in with him and he understands that he's one of the best to ever play the game now, and forever he'll be known as one of those guys. And the weight, that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
It's over. The wait is over. And now you're a Hall of Famer, and that's the only thing that should matter. So I think from that standpoint, you know, I hope he is approaching it that way and ready to enjoy the rest of his life as an NFL Hall of Famer, man. I mean, I think the group, for the last couple of years, everybody's been saying this guy belongs in the Hall of Fame. But you know, I heard him say he was 2-3-6 when he was retired. Well, I was 2-3-3 when I retired.
Yeah.
So shit, second of catches, third of touchdowns, and third of yards, or whatever it was, or maybe those numbers are a little backwards. But anyway, you know, so it's just a process, man. It's a process that you unfortunately got to live through. And you know, I'm glad that he got through it, and now it's time to enjoy life as a Hall of Famer.
Okay, and I just want to get two more quick takes on some wideouts that are playing right now. Number one, what are your thoughts on the Raiders bringing in Jordy Nelson and then having Michael Crabtree, a Dallas guy, you're a Dallas guy, end up in Baltimore? What did you think of that kind of sequence of events here in mid-March?
Well, you know, unfortunately, this money thing is still real. It's just, yeah, you know, back in the day, deal, you know. So and you know, to have, you know, Cooper coming up in a year or two with the new contract, and having having Crabtree, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm just assuming this is what the problem was, because they got Jordy for a lot less than what Crabtree was making. So so you know, I don't think it was about anything else. You know, I've heard personality, and you know, John could deal with Charlie Garner and a young Charles Woodson back in the day, he could deal with anybody's personality. So
that's a good point.
This is not going to be a personality thing with John Gruden, that's for sure. So anyway, I think from that standpoint, let's see what Jordan has left, man. And I tweeted out to Jordan because he's 32 also. I was 32 when Gruden got there. I said, man, look, he got the best out of me for the next 4 years. So, just make this thing happen. So we'll see.
And then just one last thing, Amari Cooper, John has said, hey, this guy's going to be the main vehicle of my entire passing offense. You've talked quite often about how big of a fan you are of his play. Do you think that this could be a good combination, Jordan, Gruden, and then allowing Cooper to flourish moving forward?
Well, look, the one thing I know about John Gruden is he's going to get the ball in the hands of his best players. And I don't think it's any doubt that Amari Cooper is the best offensive weapon that the Raiders have.
Yeah, Tim, gosh, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a great conversation, kind of taking us back from the draft and all the way through John Gruden. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
All right, no problem, Scott. Take care, man.
Thanks to everyone for downloading and listening to this week's edition of the Raiders Insider Podcast presented by the Evergood Sausage Company. We make the sausages you crave. And if you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts or Google Play or Spotify and subscribe to the Raiders Insider Podcast. And while you're there, please like us or give us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCS Authentic. And we'll be back with another great guest. Thanks again for listening to the Raiders Insider Podcast.
Raiders Insider Podcast on NBC Sports California.com.